was a pretty solid one. Welcome back to another Barnes Bullets podcast. Today, we're in a new setting. Not so much a new setting for me, but a new setting for our audience. We are in Sheridan at Weatherby's headquarters.
Sheridan, Wyoming.
Sheridan, Wyoming. That's right, not Sheridan, Montana.
Yeah. This is a way cooler place.
That's true. Yeah, we're in Sheridan, Wyoming. I'm sitting down with Tyler Grayton. Did I get it right?
Yeah, that was perfect, man. Yeah. You did great.
It's only taken me 3 years
I know.
To properly say your name.
Yeah, on our Weatherby podcast, Luke, my boss, it took him like, I guess I can't even say his last name. So, but it took him pretty like 5 to 10 episodes. But then he'd always be like, it's Tyler Great 10, the Great Hen.
It's hard to say. It's just the spelling that,
yeah,
right, that throws everybody off.
Yeah.
The spelling Grethen. Is bad. It looks like Grethen, yeah, for sure.
Right. Yeah, so. And Ethan O'Keefe.
Correct.
Correct. Yep. Yeah. And you are with?
I'm with American Outdoor Brands, specifically Meet Your Maker and Grilla Grills.
Nice. Yep. Yeah. And we got to use some of that stuff.
We did.
This week.
It turned yesterday. Out well for us. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was good for deer camp. I think it turned out perfect. Like, just the food is a huge part of any sort of hunting camp for me.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So, Dale, set the scene. Okay. So, yeah, this might actually come out in January.
Right. Yeah. We're actually filming it recording it, whatever you want to say, the beginning of October of 2025. But it's probably not going to be out until January 2026 because this week we were down in, let's call it South Central Wyoming.
Yeah.
Antelope hunting.
Yeah, we did a really fun antelope camp.
Yep.
And if you're getting kind of the vibe from this, the reason we're back in time and we can't tell you till now in time is because we were doing some fun product testing stuff. So we had a big antelope camp there. We had 8 of us in camp, 6 of us with tags, and we were doing some new cartridge testing, new Barnes bullet testing.
That's right.
Good little combination with Weatherby and Barnes.
And we had some awesome meat, thanks to Ethan and you, I guess, technically, because you were able to do that.
Tyler supplied it.
Yeah, I supplied the wild
game. But we processed it all the day before, so
turned out great. And I guess before we get too crazy down this road, Tyler, can you tell the audience what you do here at Weatherby?
Yeah, so at Weatherby.
And then also how you and Ethan are connected.
Yeah, I'll do the little backstory.
Yeah,
so, there you go. So I'm the marketing manager at Weatherby, so that seems like it's something different every day.
And if anybody has watched our moose hunt on the Barnes channel, you will see Tyler's face before and his excitedness. Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, that's me. So, yeah, I'm the marketing manager here. That can mean a lot of different things, but pretty much my job is to show you guys all the cool things that we like to do. So, but the reason I know Ethan is because I used to actually work at Meat. I was the brand manager, marketing manager over there before Weatherby. Ethan was working at AOB. So, we became really good friends there, but even step further back, we went to high school together. So it's just like the hunting industry is one.
It's kind of insane that we're here right now.
Yeah.
Just coming from that to this, it's crazy. Just the outdoor industry as a whole.
16-year-old kids. Yeah, 16-year-old kids grew up together. His sister was in my grade. Ethan's a few years younger, but we played football, basketball, did all the things together. And when we kind of got out of college, we started becoming pretty good friends. The outdoor thing really connected us. And then we got jobs at the same place. And then, Ethan was in my wedding just a few months ago. So it's pretty fun how – and you came to my wedding. It's just fun, that outdoor industry vibe. It's like you just – I have so many friends that are from the industry. We did that moose hunt.
Right.
And I feel like that's like a bonding moment forever. 100%. It was a hard hunt. And ever since then, it's like
– yeah. We talk regularly. We hang out.
You're just a short drive from Billings down to Sheridan, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess to kind of go flash forward a little bit to the antelope hunt, I guess can you kind of lead us into why this hunt came together?
Yeah. So
back when we started talking about it April?
Yeah, maybe April, a little bit before that. So yeah. Pretty much so we've always loaded barn stuff in Weatherby cartridges. So we are coming out with a new cartridge. So we have at this time launched the new 25 RPM. So it's a cartridge in our RPM family. Cool thing about this. So if you're a 257 Weatherby guy, which a lot of Barnes guys are, you guys have the reserve and things like that. one of our biggest asks for 257 is like, hey, it's great, it's fast, shoots those light projectiles, great, but what if you updated twist rates? Like, people want faster twist rates. Right. The trend has been
heavier bullets, faster twist rates, higher BCs.
Yeah, and for us to just go ahead and do that with 257 is really hard because there's a lot of old rifles. Right. And when you get customer service, someone being like, hey, this ammo doesn't work. So, like, if we had heavier bullets that then didn't work in these other guns, it'd be very confusing.
Well, and I mean, if you think about back to the Weatherby story, right, 257 is kind of like what got it kicked off.
Yeah.
So now to update it, 81 years now that we're into 2026,
yeah.
81 years later, right? Like,
yeah, it could cause some headaches. And the 257 diehard guys is like, oh, you shouldn't change it. But we do have the diehard guys that are like, hey, we would love an update. So, right. We thought that instead of, using an old belted cartridge, a 6.5 RPM or the RPM series is a, for Weatherby, it's a rebated rim. And it's got, that real sharp shoulder, and it doesn't have the belt that Weatherby was kind of famous for, and the double radius shoulder. But, like, that doesn't have it. We have a more modern cartridge. Mm-hmm. It fits in a smaller.
More efficient.
It's more efficient. It fits in a smaller Weatherby action. It fits in our 6-lug versus our 9-lug. That's a whole other story, so we won't get too techie on this one, but you guys can look that one up.
Yeah.
We wanted to be able to provide faster twist rate stuff. So this was just with kind of the better bullet technology for 25 cal. And this, we've been working on 25 RPM for a long time now, but now is the time because bullet technology has kind of caught up with that. So, yeah, 25 RPM is a 1 in 7.5 twist rate. So it can really stabilize those big, heavier projectiles. And where this all comes full circle with Barnes is Barnes was working on a 25 cal that would work for Creedmoor
And to be honest, like once we started having that conversation is what made me push our guys to be like, hey, we need to speed up this process a little bit. You know what I mean? Like 25 Creedmoor has come out. You know, there's talks of 25 PRCs. Yeah. You know, there's people wildcatting it right now, right? I don't know if it'll be launched in time for this podcast as we record it 4 months earlier, 3 months earlier. Then you guys come out with 25 RPM or wanting to work on 25 RPM. And obviously with us being connected and like talking about it, it's like, dude, we need to kind of expedite this process of like building something that will work across all of these platforms. Mm-hmm. But 25 RPM is going to be the first one that gets to play with it, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And it just made sense to have a Barnes bullet in the lineup. So it's kind of cool that you guys were kind of on the cusp of, developing that for the Creedmoors of the world and stuff. But this kind of did expedite that because, in our 6.5 RPM and our 338 RPM, Barnes is a big part of those bullet lineups. Right. So it just made a lot of sense. So, I mean, the advantages you're going to get of 25 RPM is now instead of shooting around 100 grain, and like a 257, you're going to be able to shoot like a 117. I think that's what we landed on.
Yeah, 117.
Yeah, 117 and higher BC, you're going to get, it's going to extend your range, a couple hundred yards with the energy and foot-pounds. And you have some cool bullet expansion stuff too with the bullet that you guys
are doing. Absolutely. I mean, right now, on the safe side, right, you can get down to like 1,900 foot per second, 1950, 1,900, right? Which then makes this 25 RPM, which, again, it's a quarter bore, right? Like, you always got to think about that. Very light bullet. 900 yards is a long shot for a 117 grain bullet, even if it is doing 3,200 feet per second, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're still going to get 2x expansion out to, let's call it 900 yards. Like, that's a long damn way, like, just to be 100% honest, right? Like, there's not a lot of people shooting that. But, I mean, if you go back against the 257, right, this is where it makes sense to me. Obviously, that I have been in love with 257 Weatherby. I never owned one until, quote, recently, right, of being able to go play with one in September, or in August. But I loved what the 257 stood for. Fast, flat, basically sighted in at 300 and you're good to five and you're good within. But then you look at like what the 25 RPM can do, and it's like, because once you get past about that 400 yard mark with the 257, it starts to really dive fast, right? Yeah. And you start to lose a lot of energy very quickly as well. That's where I think that the 25 RPM makes a lot of sense moving forward, because now, I think 600 yards is like a all day type of thing.
Yeah, for sure.
For deer, antelope, that type of
thing. Yeah, it's a great deer and an antelope, like, right. round.
And I'm not saying you can't shoot an elk with it, but
definitely limitations. There's plenty of people that say they've shot plenty of elk with 257. But,
right.
But, yeah, it's perfect for that, and it kind of blends that both the best worlds. You still, you know, the case capacity of the RPM versus the 257 is really only, like, 10 grains less of powder, but it's a little bit more efficient cartridge. So, honestly, the speeds on this for a 119, we're still at out of
117, it was like 3,200, right?
Yeah, 32, versus
32, a 101 50. Is 3,450. I mean,
yeah, and it's a little bit longer barrel. Right. That's coming out of 26-inch barrel. So it's pretty cool to see. It kind of blends that both the best of both worlds. You get the faster twist rates of like a 25 Creedmoor, but you get that velocity closer to a 257.
Right. So as we were kind of talking about this, you having 25, we started expediting the process and everything. That's when I feel like is kind of when this hunt started to come together, is like, okay, we're going to do this antelope camp. You started telling me about the people that were going to be there, some riders, right?
Yeah.
You wanted me to come down, which I'm very thankful to always hang out with the Weatherby crew because I love you guys and we have a good time together. Then Ethan's able to come.
Yeah.
So, you know, Ethan, I mean, obviously you did awesome on prepping meals, cooking meals while we were in camp. But this is also going to be your first antelope hunt.
100%. Yeah. First antelope hunt, first antelope on the ground. It was just, it's unlike anything because I'm from Missouri. So that's where I do obviously a majority of my hunting. So it was just, and it was awesome experience. And I'm definitely going to be coming back to do it again.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So give the Barnes folks a little elevator pitch on what meat is, because some of them might not know what that is. Yep. Like, why would we think you're an asset to come to camp?
Yeah. Yeah. What the heck? So, no, meat is everything meat processing. So, anything you need to bring your animal from field to table. So, grinders, mixers, stuffers, vacuum sealers, slicers, dehydrators, butcher knives, everything. So, we got to utilize some of it this week. We prepped a lot of the meals for it. Like Tyler and I, the night before, we made brats for camp. We made burgers for camp, and we did a mule deer roast.
And so, I will make a quick plug again. If you go back to our YouTube channel and you watch the bison hunt, you will see me using a lot of these products, expediting the processing of that.
What grinder did you use?
I think you sent me the 1.5.
Oh, the big guy.
You cannot keep up with that thing.
Even with a giant bison and having 500 plus pounds of meat, like, and we grind 90% of it, right? Yep. Like, we saved a little bit, like backstraps and tenderloins and stuff like that. But everything else, we basically grind. I mean, once you got it off the bone, like, the grinding was the easy part.
Yeah.
It was the more of, like, splitting all the, you know, individual stuff and cutting it up and making it the right size and all that. So, you know, we used the grinder. And then we also, you know, I think that was about the time you guys were putting out the knives and the butchering set, right?
Yep. Yeah. No, that's exactly what that grinder is for. Like, you cannot keep up with it. We used it the other night for, I think we did 175 brats. It took us a couple hours.
Yeah.
Well, Tyler roped me. I don't know how I got roped into this, but he roped me into processing all of his sausage from last year's elk. Nice. So I sent him a document before. I was like, hey, let's try to get some content of this. And I was like, he said, there's going to be 8 guys. I was like, oh, perfect. Let's get a few pounds of sausage, a few pounds of burgers, which we made brat burgers. And he thawed 50 pounds of meat. And I'm like, all right, so.
He got bamboozled cleaning up all my grind from last year.
Nice. But it was great. No, like, DJ came out and filmed it, and it's always good to get that experience to make sausage. So, we made 175 brats in a couple hours, and a majority of that is, you know, maybe reloading a stuffer or cutting up the brats, but it's just good practice. Like, I enjoy doing it, so it's very rewarding. One, just like serving meals to people, but also whenever it's wild game, it's just completely different for me.
Yeah, for this trip in general, we wanted to like do like a very traditional Western style hunt. We knew the antelope camp where we were going is going to be like very like high success, like lots of opportunity.
Right.
So it was like perfect to test these bullets to get some, you know, terminal performance. But we wanted it to be a fun vibe. So like, being able to like only eat wild game dinners and like use meat that we harvested before is kind of that is just a cool circle of life moment in the sense that like, yeah, we could have stayed in a hotel or we could have like went out to eat for every meal, but to like elevate your hunting camp, you can pre-make and bring real food. Like, if this was not a grind of a hunt by any means, but if you're doing a wall tent style hunt, like, you don't have to eat freeze-dried meals and you don't have to eat fast food if you're like hunting close to town. It just, it makes that net, like, that level of camp just that, like, that much better. Like, I feel like we did make a lot of good stuff, but the fact that we were using mule deer for our pulled sandwiches, everyone just thought it was better than what it was. But it was just like a good vibe. Everyone's like, oh, that is so good. That's that mule deer. I mean, that mule deer is actually it tastes like beef. We're like, how'd you guys do this?
Right. Well, and it wasn't dry, right? Yeah. Which is huge, because, you know, a lot of times you do any type of pulled wild game and it dries out very quick. So whatever you guys did do, I will compliment that it was awesome.
Ethan it was great. Ethan was sneaky. He had we smoked it on a grill. But he injected it with beef broth and did all the stuff.
I knew we had to do something, because I was like, I've never done a venison roast like this for pulled sandwiches. Like, I'm used to doing pork or beef. But I was like, there's not that fat content in there. Right. So we had to do something. So I injected it with some beef broth. And then once I wrapped it, because you wrap once it hits like 165, I poured some more beef broth in there to just kind of steam it and help break it down a little bit. But yeah, we were, Tyler and I, like, this morning, we were like, man, that actually turned out, like, insanely well, like, better than when we tried it the other night. So,
it was really good.
But, back to that full circle thing. Like, that's the coolest part about it for me. Like, not that we needed, like, all this fuel for this type of hunt, but in other scenarios you do. And it's just, like, it kind of takes you back to being normalized, like, where you're eating a good meal. Or after you kill something, like, it's just also a good way to create memories and just eat a good meal to celebrate.
Right.
And I like taking wild game and making it familiar, right? So it's like, some people are like, they only grind it, or they only, you know, like, when you're introducing people to wild game, it's like, well, something familiar as a brat. It's pretty hard to mess up brats. It's hard to make them, but once you get the system down and all the right tools to make it, a brat's a brat. So then people are like, these brats are not just store-bought. Like, you made these yourself, and, oh, it's also elk. Like, it's really easy to then normalize people to, like, hunting and eating wild game.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that I was going to talk about, right, and you were kind of hinting at it there, was, like, this was essentially a DIY. Yes, we were kind of getting, quote, driven around and stuff like that, but it was essentially a DIY hunt, right? And it was very relaxed, which was cool. That's one thing that I do love about antelope hunting and antelope camps, right, is most of the time it's probably one of my more relaxed hunts during the year, you know. So I would love to hear Ethan's kind of hunt. One, I wasn't with you. I was only about 3 feet away from you when you shot, but I wasn't with you on your hunt. So I would love to hear a little bit about your hunt and how you got to kill your first antelope on this
one. Yeah, no, it started off.
You don't have to talk about the bullet, because I know you were shooting something. Something. And that's okay, because we do have to, you know, I know that you guys load, you know, and we can talk about that to the audience, right? You guys load, because we were using Weatherby ammo on this hunt, and you load multiple different manufacturers, which is makes complete sense. So with that, Ethan was shooting something different than a Barnes.
But a lot of the guys in camp were using Barnes, and they died. The ones that were shooting Barnes died pretty darn quick.
Died pretty quick.
I think, they all died pretty quick. But that was it was an awesome experience. It was like the day before or the night before, everyone was talking about like who's going to shoot first.
And what I think Tyler was like, and everything else.
Yeah, and I think Tyler was like, well, Ethan's never killed an antelope before, and everyone's like, he's the first one on the gun. And I'm like, you don't have to do that. And it was like everyone simultaneously like, nope, you are first.
Yeah, it was kind of like, fun. Right. Every person was like, our mission is that Ethan kills the first antelope.
Yeah, so like there is like a little bit of weird pressure there. Like that's what I was telling Tyler on the way down, to being the first guy, because you know, I want to get one down early. I'm not going to like sit here and wait for something huge. I've never killed an antelope.
Right.
I ended up being blessed to kill a really nice goat, which I was super excited about. But there was a little bit of pressure there. I was like, I want to get one down. And obviously, you know, you don't ever want to miss. That just extends the day for the next guy. So, but it was awesome. I've never done that kind of spot and stalk hunting.
Yeah.
It was pretty relaxed, but like, any sort of hunting is going to get my heart going.
Yeah.
And the way it went down, that's definitely what happened for me. So,
how long have you been hunting, Ethan?
I've been hunting for, 17 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're how old?
29.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
I was glad that it didn't go down on the first stock, so I could at least, you know, get that under my belt and get a little bit more experience. So it was, I ended up shooting the first goat that we actually put a stock on, probably an hour and a half before that. Casey was like, hey, that's a good one. Like, we're going to go after him. He was with three does, and we tried to kind of flank around him and come over this hilltop. And he was just doing, from what you guys say, antelope things. So he was actually, as soon as we crested the hill, it's not like he saw us, but those three does were at 300 yards. And he just took off for another group of does as we were doing that. He was at like 400 yards, and that's not like kind of trotting on the run with 25 mile an hour wind. I was like, that's not something I want to do. I was like, if one of you guys wants to take that shot, you can.
Everyone was like, no, you're going to, like, we're not going to take this goat from you. So, I mean, we're in Wyoming. The wind blows.
Always blows.
Yeah.
So, no, I was pretty doing lope things. As we go on the stock, which is, again, fun. The way we were doing it is it was literally Ethan and then the ranch manager was helping us out. He's real good with new hunters. So he was helping Ethan. And then it was cameraman Luke and then it was me and then it was two riders so he had like a peanut gallery and we're like got like eight
everyone's guys. Just kind of in a line.
So not only are you trying to stalk a goat, you know, which is already difficult enough if you're just one guy, but now you have six guys or I guess five guys.
So we
kind of hung back though.
We were using the terrain and then like when we got to like, ooh, okay, now this last like 25 yards they need to go do it themselves, we would just hang back. But it's pretty cool.
We ended up putting another stock on that same goat. We got to, it was actually like 130 yards, but he was, we were kind of down and there was still like quite a bit of grass. We would have had to get a little bit higher and they were moving to the right over the hilltop. And this buck, I mean, I had him in the crosshairs and it was like 140 yards, but he's constantly moving. Yeah. Like that just seems to be like what they do. They're pretty wiry animals.
They hardly ever stop.
Yeah. And he never gave me an opportunity and I was like, I'm still not going to take that. Like he's moving constantly. There's like three or four does around him. And he took off with all of them.
Yeah. I like to compare him to like a cutting horse. He was doing the whole where like, you know, they're like kind of herding them and then like cutting them off.
Yeah, you just see him. I mean, like zigzagging. One doe tries to like kind of slip away and all of a sudden, like you said.
Yeah. Like they're definitely still rutting. Like,
yeah.
Cool. I know. I think the rut starts a little earlier, but it was definitely cool to see. And we ended up, going after him. We kind of lost sight of him. And then Casey, the ranch manager, was like, well, there's a drainage over here. Let's go. Let's get over there. Check that out. We crested the hill, and all I saw was two white antelope butt cheeks. And I'm like, hey, they're like, that's the first one we saw. We figured the rest of them were down there.
Yeah, it was like a little reservoir. So there was like this little water spot.
Yeah, and I'm like, Casey, get down. And we ended up making a stalk on these ones. It was two young bucks and a couple other does that were originally with the second group that this goat cut up with. And so I just had my gun up ready because if he came out of some crevice or somewhere out of a ditch, like I was ready to shoot.
Yeah.
They ended up taking off. The other two riders were behind us, probably what, like 100 yards?
Yeah, they were 100 yards. And I'm like,
just letting us do our thing.
Yeah, and I was actually like hand signaling, communicating. We're like, oh, there's four right here. And I was kind of hand signaling like they're too small or anything. So and when that happened.
Yeah. As soon as that happened, like they said, Tyler's eyes got like huge and like they saw his face and like this buck was basically flanked us from right behind. I don't know how far away, like 150 yards behind us.
Yeah. Maybe even closer. We said it was like the first time that we got stalked by an antelope.
Yeah. Like we did not see him when we were going up there. So he flanked us and came running around and then came down the hill. And that's when my heart started pumping. Because when things happen like that fast, it's not like I was set up there and I was ready for a shot. And I was prone and I was waiting for him to present a shot. It was like it happened so fast, which I love that style of hunting. But he came down this hill and actually went closer down to the road. And he was kind of moving around. He was at 200 yards and then he kept going. And then right at... I think the last yardage I got was 250 yards.
Yeah.
I was still moving. Like, I'm on a tripod. I'm not like in my best position to shoot. Honestly, I'm like on a knee, which I'm comfortable shooting, but I rather would have been seated or prone, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it was happening so quick. So I got on him, and I'm still moving quite a bit because I'm breathing heavy, and I'm like, I'm not going to take that.
Yeah.
Just waiting to calm down, waiting to get a good shot. And, like, as I'm ready, he's, like, taking one step, kind of quartering away. Mm-hmm. And as he does that, he takes one step and drops his head as I shoot. And there's, like, 25-mile-an-hour wind. And I might have had a little bit of wind drift, but I was also, you know, I was moving a little bit. And, of course, the meat guy saved all the meat.
Nice.
Right in the headshot. So it was super.
I mean, was it literally like a headshot?
Oh, or yeah.
Like neck, so, right. Like neck head.
I mean, were they like right here in the back?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like literally like almost right behind the ear. Domed him. Like
yeah, we went back and watched it. Luke showed us that. And it was like, because they were like, you know, when you shoot, I'm still not like, I'm not watching him fall in the scope because right. you lose a little. And then
yeah.
he's like, you dropped him. And that's obviously when we all got fired up, started right. high-fiving. I'm a hugger when I kill something. So I'm like hugging everybody. But yeah, it was an awesome experience. And Luke was like, I think he presented that pocket as soon as he took that step. I'm like, great. And then we get up there and I'm trying to figure it out because I see this hole in his head. And I'm like, did I shoot like through the, you know, the armpit basically and yeah. like exit out the head? But no, that was the entry hole. And he took that step and dropped his head at the same exact time and just thumped him.
Yeah. So like we watched the video. So he kind of like took the step back and away. So like yeah. it was pretty good left and right too, but just the crazy angle that it like went just like inches past his front shoulder and then just domed him right in the back of the head. So yeah. we nicknamed him the head stamp buck.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting, you know, I mean, even with quick cartridges and everything else, right? And not take, I mean, you said it was 250 yards, right? Like,
and that's
how even from the time that you're pulling the trigger and it mm-hmm. getting there and 0.2 seconds or whatever that an animal can move that much, you know, to adjust something like that. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, it is. And that's like, I mean, I've shot further than that on a range, but that's not like a distance I'm normally shooting. Like right. I hunt hardwoods in Missouri primarily. Yeah. Like I don't have that shot.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I was going to ask, you know, to go back to the 25 RPM, right. And being a, you know, a quarter bore, mm-hmm. a very fast, you know, flat shooting type of gun. Like, what's kind of your normal being from the Midwest and hunting the Midwest mainly?
Yeah.
Like what is your kind of normal caliber that you're hunting? What is your normal, like, shot ranges, like, all that?
Well, like, what I grew up shooting, like, I think everyone has that classic, like, 30-30 lever action. Yeah. Like, that's what we did in the hardwoods. But then recently it's just been – like, I shoot – I don't think where I hunt now, I can't shoot over, like, 100 yards.
Right.
I'm shooting, like – because it's thick hardwoods.
Yeah.
And – the past couple of years, I had a 30-06, but this is 100% my new whitetail round in Missouri. Like I'm excited to see. I feel like
that's the most Missouri thing. It is 30-06.
Yeah, it is.
Well, 30-30 and 30-06, right? It's like that is that are the quintessential whitetail rounds.
Yeah, I think there. I think my first I think it was a 243 was
yeah,
like
youth too.
Model 243 was like what I shot when I was like 12. Yeah. But yeah, this is definitely my new whitetail round. I'm ready to see just how lethal it is on whitetail in Missouri.
I mean, if you're shooting them at 70 yards, it's going to be pretty damn lethal.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to blow right through them.
Yeah. There. I do have some other shot opportunities on the in-laws' property, so I think it'll be cool to kind of put it to the test there too. They've got a lot of cattle pasture, so you can shoot out to 500 yards there. Right. I just haven't done it. So
yeah, I think it's a cool thing that will be for you though, is just being able to shoot more. Like you don't go to the range to pound away with the old 30-06,
no, right?
So it's like this was kind of your second Western experience, mm-hmm. but like the more you do it, the more confidence you have. Like yeah. it's just it'll be a lot better cartridge to maybe go plink a little bit.
Exactly.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Awesome. You want to talk about yours or you want to talk about mine?
Dude, you tell me yours because we weren't with you. Yeah. So yeah, you both were with me. So we yeah. kind of saw mine and I was the, you know, kind of the camp host. So
I think
we waited till the very end.
He was the first shooter. Yeah. I ended up being the second shooter and we were in different groups. Like yeah. I killed second.
Did I kill the first antelope with a 25
yes.
RPM?
Yes. That is factual because yours, I think, was like 15 minutes
yeah.
later maybe.
Yeah. It was pretty quick afterwards. Yeah. So to kind of go back to, you know, the pre-hunt when everybody was talking about like what they wanted, and then we figured out that it was for your first hunt, and we're like, you're gonna kill. I said that either I'm gonna kill, I want to shoot a really, really big one, which we're not in quote the best trophy unit of Wyoming or anything like that, so I knew that wasn't really an option, or I want to kill a funky one. I've killed a lot of antelope, right? I've lived out here for a decade now, and even coming out here before, you know, I've killed 15 or more antelope over the years. So I said, I want to shoot a funky one. I've never gotten a chance to really do that because everybody always talks me out of it. So going into it, I was with Todd from Eastman's, and we kind of went out. And, you know, on these rider type of events, usually the rider always shoots first. And I was trying to kind of push Todd to be that. But, again, Todd being a Wyoming guy and working for Eastman's, he's like, well, I'm going to be pretty damn picky. And I'm like, well, I won't. Like, I just like to have a good time. So he kind of told me that, you know, unless it's a really, really big one, like, you can shoot first type of thing. And I was like, all right, whatever, cool. So we drove around. You know, we'd seen a lot of antelope that first 2 hours of the morning, right? But we were just kind of more just taking our time. It was just two people in the truck with a tag. So, you know, we knew we had all morning to kind of figure something out and go to riding around. We started joking, you know, we started like seeing all these road sheds as we drove by. And I was like, hey, when we see 10 road sheds, like, then we'll shoot a buck. You know what I mean? I think we got to 9 and we came around this corner. And about that time, like, here's this buck out chasing some does. And he's got a horn that just goes like almost 90 degrees off of his head. And literally all of us put our glass up at about the same time. And all of us at the same time said, well, there's the funky one. Like, all right, game on. So we go decide to try to put on a stalk, and as he does, antelope doing antelope things, he chases another buck off, which then leads him to another group of antelope, and then he gets in there and he starts intermixing. So we actually like really didn't put a stalk on him that time. We kind of like walked up to the next hill just to see what he was doing, and when we got there, we saw him and then another really nice buck. And it was kind of like, okay, I'd shoot either one of those, like whichever one will give me the option first or the opportunity first. So we go to make stalk, we get to like 450-ish. And again, kind of going back to it's 20, 25 miles an hour wind. And it's like, you know, I'm pretty confident in shooting, but I haven't shot this cartridge enough to really know what it's going to do in that type of wind. Yes, I have a ballistics app and all that type of stuff that I can kind of figure it out. But, you know, I told myself I want to get within 400, and if I can get it either the wind directly behind me or directly in my face, right, it's just going to help. So we kind of watch those, and they kind of filter over the hill. And immediately, like, as they do that, you know, I was like, okay, if we can get to that rock, I think we're going to be within 300-ish.
So this rock, though, the story back at camp from...
Well, I was about to get there.
Okay. Yeah. I'll let you get there, and then I'll comment on it. But so, it got pretty funny at camp.
I mean, it was... I think they said it was a mile away. I think it was like more like a half mile away. Let's call it that. But I was definitely the tallest person in the group. I'm not that tall. I'm 6'2". But like I'm tall, kind of leaner guy, whatever. The people that I was hunting with were more in that like 5'8" range. and two of them were kind of bigger guys.
Yeah, I was going to say, Todd won't be mad at me for saying this. He's built like me, like a bowling ball. Like we like to say, you got to roll us down the hill.
Yeah. So as soon as we decide that that's the rock that we need to get to, I was like, all right, you guys ready? And they're like, yeah, I take off. I mean, and when I say take off, I'm walking, but I'm walking fast and long legs and everything else. And I looked back at one point, and they're like 250 yards behind me. And I'm like, dude, what's going on right now? You know, and I'm like, well, I'm going. Like, I'm at least going to get eyes on him. I'll wait for the other guys to get there, right, before I pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. But get eyes on him. So, yeah, you heard the story that Colby, right, like said that he dropped something or he went down to tie his shoe or something like that, and he looked up, and I was like 400 yards in front of him. And those guys are all like huddled together or whatever, and he's like, holy crap. And he said he had to run up to catch up with me and all that type of stuff. So that was pretty funny. But anyway, we get to the rock, and immediately, like, as we're starting to peek over the rock, and it was like this perfect, I mean, couldn't have asked for anything better, like a little bit of outcropping that was like perfectly flat on top. I had a bipod on the rifle, right, shooting the Alpine CT. And I was like, dude, this is awesome because I can lay on it. And then the rock was about a little bit below chest high for me when I stood. So I could then like almost lay on top of the rock. So I got just stupid steady. And he ended up being, he was 358, I think, when we first ranged him. And he was like in and out of does. We were looking for that other buck, couldn't find him, saw the super funky one that flared out. And I looked over at Colby and I said, when he gets to 350, let me know. And it's he's literally just like looking through his, you know, ranging binos. And he's like, 358, 354, 352. I was like, that's good enough. And he turned. And as soon as he turned broadside, I was like, boom, you know, shot. I'd already doped it, right, for like 350. And I held 2 inches of wind or something like that. And then just absolutely heart shot him. And when I shot, you know, DJ was rolling camera over the top of me. Todd was straight behind me. He's like, I literally watched the vapor trail go in. And he's like, it's weird because I thought that you hit him in the back. It just looked like, for whatever reason, the vapor trail like looked like it hit into the back. And he just kind of boom, and he hit, and he just kind of did one of those like hunches. And when he spun around, dude, it was like gushing just out the other side. And they're like, well, he's dead. And he just kind of like spun around there a second, and he stumbled for 10, 12 yards or whatever and fell dead. So it was just really cool. Got up there, ended up looking at it and just made like, I mean, truthfully, one of my better shots, you know, for that type of range. And to happen so fast after walking half mile, mile, whatever you want to call it, it was really, really cool. And
we're back.
We are back.
I don't know where we left off, but we can – what do you think? All right, so Draper kills his buck. It's pretty awesome. We're all – excited. We did the what we call the Utah photo, and
yeah,
then we had 10 guys behind one antelope, which is pretty fun. So yeah, now pressure is off, but then also on. It's like off, right? That like everyone at the event has had success. Everyone shot pretty darn good,
but you're the last guy with the tag.
And you got four trucks full of your good buddies who
also want to play Peanut Gallery.
Yes, Peanut Gallery. There's no shortage of jabbering and all the good stuff, right, that comes with
peer pressuring to shoot the buck.
Yeah. Yes.
No.
Yes.
No inch of land was uncovered with the amount of glass that was in these trucks.
Yeah. That is so true.
And we're cruising, and I'm getting multiple texts. Like DJ, our camera guy, DJ, texts me. He's like, "Can't eat the horns. Like, come on, pick one." So we saw a bunch of really nice bucks that,
yeah.
When I think about antelope, I always think of those defining features. Like with your buck, he was goofy. With right. Fabian's buck, he was super tall. Ethan's had that perfect heart shape, like buck that you always think of. Yeah. Todd's was massive. So I think of those things, and these bucks were just great. They had decent mass, they had decent hooks, and they had decent length. But, when I think of like antelope are all about the same size. Like when you go from a 73 to a 76, they look about the same on the hoof. Right. It's not until they get over 80 that you're like, oh, that's different.
Yeah.
You know, so I was just wanting to kill. And we had plenty of time. So I was just like, okay, I'm not going to be super picky, but I want to find one with one of those features.
He was just going to milk it.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah. So we get going, and then finally we find a buck. We actually spotted him on the one side, but he was probably at 2,000 yards. And we're like, man, he looks like he has good cutters, and he's going to go up over the hill. Well, we'll hunt our way back and around and see if we can pick him up on the other side. Well, we ended up picking him up on the other side. We saw that right side. He had a good cutter on his right side and kind of a weird little flare out on one of the sides, the opposite side of that.
Right.
So we're like, that's him. And he was probably, so he was right in front of us, then kind of disappeared. And we see some other antelope, like, well, that's not him. And then all of a sudden he pops up at like 600 yards. So 600-700 yards. He's walking away from us. So we're like, well, I mean, I feel super confident in my setup. We checked dopes the day before, and I mean, I get to shoot a lot. So I've felt very confident in my setup. And so we were able to like kind of run up and get up on this kind of high point, a super solid laid down. And he was at 650 yards. I had the dope all in there. Casey, he's a very, very versed guy. He shoots a lot of these extreme long range competitions. Yeah. So I have a mill scope. We're speaking the same language. Right. He's giving me the wind call, and like he's on him, and he just stays so calm in that moment. So I felt solid, and he just did what antelope do. He just never stopped.
Yeah.
He was following does,
walking straight away.
Yeah, the does were, yep, and he was just so kind of disappears, and it was like, man, I felt ready in that moment though, which was kind of fun, and it's good to have comments like that. It was kind of the opposite where it's like, for you, the buck like was running all over the place, and now you're trying to get steady. Like for me, it's like, ooh, I'm prone, I'm calm. He's 650, like. This is a super ethical shot, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so then we bump up to the next hill to see if we can get back on him. Because a lot of times you just got to play topography, right?
Right. So, yeah, let him roll over and try to get to that hill as quick as you can. Yeah,
so we did that once and we got there. And then they were ready over the next hill. We just caught the tail end of him. So we did it again. And we were able to get to where the last time we saw him. And it's so crazy how fast the antelope can move.
Even if they're just walking, it feels like they cover ground so fast.
Because we come over this hill and we see antelope, and then Casey was like, oh, there he is. And I'm like, they are way far left. I'm like, are you sure it's him? And he's like, yeah, I'm positive. I'm like, okay. So then I get on him, get prone, feel good, get my dope. He's around 400 to 420, somewhere in there. And now the position of the antelope, before I had the wind, right in my face. So now we're positioned. I got a left to right, and it's going pretty good. So Casey, he gives me the wind call. He's like, I think hold point two on this one. So I feel great. I hold 0.2 mils and execute a good shot. And when I got my spotter, he goes, hi. I was so shocked because I felt very confident. Everything broke well.
Yeah.
So I looked at the top of my scope and I was like, did I dial wrong? Like, no, but I know my dope is on. Like, there's no way. Again, I was just confident in my setup. So he's like, man, that wind is kind of ripping down there. Maybe let's go another, let's hold point three or hold, give him another point two. So like double that wind hold.
Right.
And I was like, perfect. Got recalm, stayed collected, and then just, executed another shot and just hit him perfect. So
it's interesting. Like, you just took longer to tell that story of like from first shot to last shot then actually I mean that happened really really fast you know what yeah. I mean like I mean I felt like your first and second shot were 5-8 seconds.
Oh, it was super fast. The bolt like immediately, like, right.
Give just another point two,
just like muscle memory, right. It was like boom boom. I did come off the gun to make sure that I didn't dial wrong, but I was using a loophole Mark IV. It's something I'm super confident in,
right?
So he gave me another wind call. And again, when you're shooting these little smaller calibers, it's like better for recoil. They're super flat shooting. But then again, it's like, that's where I could be a much better shooter. And like when I'm thinking about, ooh, what can I do to be better?
Right.
It's those wind calls. I would say that's one of my weakest things is wind calls. And then even positional shooting to some point, which makes me excited for like NRL Hunter stuff.
Yeah.
So, I know you tried a couple of those this year.
Yeah, they're so much fun. But yeah, I mean, to kind of go back to that, like you're saying, I think wind calls are one of the toughest things to do. I don't care if you've been shooting a ton or not. You know what I mean? Is it 10 or is it 17 or is it 22 or whatever, right? But to go back to like what you're saying about lighter bullets, right? When you majority shoot heavier magnums, right? 300 Weatherby, 7 PRC, something like that, and you have that heavier mass. It doesn't matter, when you're shooting a 107 grain bullet, 117 grain bullet, whatever that it is, less mass, you could still have high BCs. It's still going to get affected by the wind a heck of a lot more than, again, those heavier bullets. So it's something to really think about. And to be honest, I mean, I probably don't even practice enough in the wind. It feels like when you want to go to the range is always when it's, nice bluebird day and it's 60 degrees and everything else. You're not trying to go to the range. Yeah.
When you go to zero, you're like, hey, degrees. You're like, when I want to go zero, my gun, I want as many no features as possible. And you guys got to do the tour of Weatherby, and Barnes has the underground ranges as well,
right.
Where I'm spoiled.
You're shooting a controlled environment.
Yeah. I'm shooting downstairs in a tunnel at 100 yards, and I'm getting all my good ballistic data and all the BCs of the worlds and stuff. So I feel very confident in my, data in, data out. So like when I went to verify the next day up here in Sheridan, it was not windy at all when we verified. And it's like, walked it out to 700 super quick. It's like, feel pretty confident.
Right.
And I get to shoot a lot most of the time. So it's like,
absolutely.
So, but then it's just that, it's that next level of hunter, right? Right. You gotta, shooter and hunter though. Cause like the wind is now in it's hunting, right? There's an aspect to that.
Yeah, there's always going to be some type of environmental that you have to take into account. You know, I mean, even if it's 80 degrees or 30 degrees or something like that, I mean, it's kind of interesting when you start doing it. And we say all this to talk about, like, again, it was only 400 yards, right? It's not a long, quote-unquote long shot. I know for Ethan, he would have thought that was, like, obscenely long. But, like, you know, I mean, for the most part, right, like, 400 yards, I feel like is kind of a lot of people's, like, hey, I'd take that shot all day, right? Mm-hmm. But then you start thinking about, you put a 15, 20, 20-plus mile-an-hour wind in that, and, mm-hmm. like, you know, that bullet moves 8, 12 inches pretty quick.
Yeah.
So how are you guys – what's the best way you guys are judging wind? Because obviously it's going to be different at, you know, at certain points of the shot. So are you just watching things moving around the animal and also just feeling it and putting it all together to judge your wind?
I mean, I feel like
this is a whole topic debate. It's like, do you judge at where you're at or there?
That's, yeah,
or
that's,
if you're shooting across canyon, are you judging what the canyon's doing? Are you judging there? Are you judging here? I mean, yeah, a lot. I feel like I try to look at, like, what is it doing downrange mostly? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also I will say I am not a good wind call guy. I'm going to put it in my ballistics app and then just try to hope that I'm holding roughly what my ballistics app's telling me to do. But it's almost like a lot of times I feel like I under gauge the wind, right? It's like, I think it's 10, but it's actually 15 or 17, you know what I mean? So, like, then you still have that little bit. Or, I mean, I've had it where I'm like, man, it's got to be blowing 30. It's like, well, it's only like 22, but it feels like it because it sucks, you know? So I don't know if that answered your question or if I just kind of beat around of, like, I don't really know what the hell I'm doing, actually.
No, it does. It's really the answer. I was curious.
For me, I think, like, my next step in, like, even becoming better is I really want to get – there's so many tools nowadays.
Right.
Like, I feel like there's not – you know, other than money, there's not a big excuse to not know how to use a Kestrel or have a Kestrel in your pack.
Right.
Where it's, like, maybe not in that moment, but, like, if you get enough, like, shooting and practicing in the wind, you're getting a good feel for, like, what is a 20 – even if it's not at the target, right? Because that's a whole debate, people for target versus you.
Right.
But if you're, like, getting good wind off your Kestrel – and you are all summer doing NRO Hunter or doing a PRS match or anything like that, then you know what that wind feels like if you do it 1,000 times before. So then in a hunting situation, it'll be much more natural. I think that's where hunters could get better, and I know that's where I could get better.
That seems like the most important part is just reps and practice at that, like getting to know what that wind feels like and actually shooting in that wind. So
And we were even, you know, reps in anything. We were talking about, like, we obviously had 6 antelope in camp, and when we were working on mine, we're like, man, it's fun to, like, work on an animal, like, quartered on the ground versus hanging up too. Yeah. And it's like, man, it is kind of, I like doing it when you can hang it up, 'cause it's just like, oh, this is the muscle group. It's not just cutting up an animal. It's like, oh, here is the, you know, the bottom round or the top round, eye round, like, really knowing those muscle groups. So it's kind of just reps in anything.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, so end up wrapping up the hunt pretty dang quick. I think we ended up killing 6 antelope in 9-ish hours, give or take, with a 2-hour break somewhere in there. So, I mean, it was pretty crazy because granted, we only planned for a day and a half, and it took a day. So we just kind of had the next morning to kind of hang out and take our time and get everybody out the door.
That night was phenomenal. That's when we had the sandwiches.
Yeah.
Man, it was good. Sandwiches, and some people made them into nachos. It was great.
It's kind of a build-your-own type thing with the queso and the elk, like, and mule deer and
the meat,
chips.
And go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good.
We even got to seal some of the – Luke brought one of those anchor, like, battery power station things, and we actually got to seal some backstraps at camp this morning. That's the first time I've ever done that.
Chamber vac. If you don't know what a chamber vac is, look it up. It's like quite the machine.
Yeah.
It's like
– change your life type of machine.
Game changer.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I've already got all my backstraps sealed. So.
Yeah.
I mean, we could have even done more than that if we wanted to, you know.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we could have sealed everybody's, right? Like, pretty cool. Talk a little about the Grilla grills.
Yeah. So we had a couple of them at camp, which – was awesome. We had them paired with these, like, power stations. They're 300 watt batteries, so you can run pellet grills wherever you want. So we had our small tailgater camping model, which is the Chimp, and then the next size up is the Silverback, and we had both of those running. We kind of cooked all the meat on one and the sides on the little one, and we were running them off those power stations. And it's kind of just...
And it you brings, guys sell the power stations as yes, well, right? So yeah. it does go hand in hand.
Exactly. Like, not a lot of grill manufacturers are selling those power stations. Right. So, you know, you've got your high-end brands. This is more of a approachable price point, and it's something you can see. You see the grill a name on. Oh, that can run my grill.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to tell the story. So it's pretty cool. Like, you don't normally get that kind of, like, novelty experience at hunting camp, especially, like, wall tent type camping.
Right.
So it's pretty cool to fire up those smokers and just produce good meals off of them. So we had those two pellet grills at camp, and then we've got gas grills, charcoal grills, and then a majority of our grills can be built into outdoor kitchens, which is obviously that's like huge now. Right. But that's what we want. We want to push that story. We want to build memories around it, and that's like that's one of my favorite parts of hunting camp was. What we did the past 2 days was, you know, you're making memories. And a lot of part of that for me is like, when I go back to think about deer camp when I was younger, is like the meals you're eating. I don't know. That's just that's like a big part of it for me.
Food has a way of bringing people together.
Yeah. Especially when it's wild game and it's like, we talked about the full circle and,
well, I mean, you think about like Tyler's Elk, right? I'm sure while you were having to make those 150 brats, you were probably hearing the story of how he killed his elk the entire time, right?
The Idaho Bull really made me work for it. So, no, and man, that little tailgater, you call it the chimp, that one I feel like is kind of a cool cheat code for, especially if you're thinking out west, it's an enclosed deal. So, like, you know, like some places you can't have open fires when it gets too dry.
Yep.
And honestly, so pellet grills, you think low and slow all the time, which is what I think. But we were kind of using it as an oven because it's essentially an oven in a sense, but it you know uses the heat from the pellets.
Yeah, like 350. We were warming the sandwich meat up at like 375, 400, and then the breakfast burritos too. But yeah, that's a popular model. That's great for that style of base camp hunting. It weighs like 90 pounds. So, I mean, it's still overbuilt. Like, using them out here, you guys are going to love them because they are stainless steel and they've got all those internal components that are stainless steel and the double wall insulation. So hunting camp is, you know, it's normally cold. We didn't experience a ton of that, but it can get down to 10 degrees and you can still run these grills fine.
That's the stainless steel might have just sold me on one that I might have to change from another manufacturer of pellet grill than I have. Because, I mean, mine lives outside all year long, right? And even though I cover it up, I mean, it still occasionally gets some snow on it or something like that because I cook on it and then I forget to cover it up. And 3 days later, I'm like, oh, it snowed and everything else.
So. Yeah. You can, like, we have a lot of people submit photos, like, you use a lot of that user generated content. And people, it's almost like a competition online who can cook in like the worst conditions. So people are cooking in blizzards and submitting photos, and it's cool. You don't really need a thermal blanket on our grills.
So. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. When do you think the itty bitty tailgate one's going to come out?
I'm not sure yet. Okay. This is in January, so I'm not going to say a date yet. But
you're saying it is in the works?
Yeah.
Potentially?
Yep. And one thing I did not mention, we have a vertical smoker. Fully double wall insulated, but that's like, we've done a lot of the pairing, starting co-branding with meat a little bit, because it's perfect for hanging sausage, summer sausage or brats or kielbasa, because it comes with a sausage hanging rack. It's massive. Otherwise I would have brought one this week, but it's huge and it's perfect for making sausage or if you're a caterer or you want to cook a lot of pork or brisket, like it's got a lot of capacity.
Yeah. When I was in
the
military.
What do you call it? The mammoth?
The mammoth. Yes. Mammoth.
Okay. Yeah. When I was in the military, we did a lot of like team dinners and stuff like that on the weekends and everything. We would cook just, you know, 8 pork butts at one time and all that. Obviously this was before the mammoth came around, but like those type of things are cool, but they're so dang big.
I remember you talking about just like this event and you're like, man, like gorilla and me has really brought out, like, you're like, I enjoy cooking food for people, like just events like this, because like to me, like, yeah, there was a lot of prep and I was a little bit stressed, but you're like, no, this is the fun part. Now everyone gets to eat your creation and you get to provide.
So. Well, yeah, and by like doing it pre-hunt, right? Like, that didn't really take a lot of time for us to get back to camp. And, you know, I mean, it took you 30 minutes to heat some stuff up and all that, but like, people were just able to hang out and not feel like you're rushing to get food or get food cooked or whatever. And like you said, it made it where we didn't have to go out to dinner and all that. So it was huge to have that.
Yeah, that's the kind of experience I prefer when I'm hunting, honestly. So
yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So first impressions of 25 RPM with all of this coming out. What do you think?
I think people are really gonna dig it. I mean, it just kind of combines that, you know. I jokingly like to say that whether it be with 25 cals, with 257, we've always been on the top of the mountain, but we haven't peaked yet. So with the introduction of 25 RPM, I think it's different enough from 257. And I think people are really going to enjoy just kind of a little bit more modern case technology and more modern bullets. And I only think the bullets are going to get better too. So
we have anything else out by the time that we talk about this?
No, just be on the lookout. This will be probably before Western Hunt, but we have another big stuff coming Western Hunt that we've been working on some fun things together too on that. Yeah. So I feel like Weatherby, we're a small enough company that we kind of got out of the whole like you have to launch it at a certain point.
Yeah.
So that makes our job fun, is we get to launch a lot of new products throughout the year. So we'll, you know, it's January right now. I bet we'll always be launching something.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if this little 25 cal 117 is actually going to be launched. I guess I'm making this our launch day as of now. But we're going to have quite a bit of stuff coming out down the line as well. I think that we're going to, obviously there's some things that we've been working on as well, together, as well as other things that are really fulfilling or filling out lines as they need to, as we worked on certain new lines last year, this year, whatever, wherever we are at in time of this podcast.
Yeah, this is a moving target still.
Yeah. But yeah, it should be fun. I think that 2026 is going to be a really cool year. I will say that it, you know, of course, you had to come out with a 25 RPM when I finally got my 257, and now you're going to have to make me turn around and say, well, there could be a reason for a 25 RPM in the gun safe as well. So, yeah, I mean, again, I can't thank you enough for, one, inviting me on this. Obviously, anytime that we get to hunt together, I always thoroughly enjoy it. We have a good time. We've done a few things together now, and I hope that it's, I can almost guarantee it's not going to be the last time that we do anything. So
I think that's what the fun thing is. If you can, man, you build these relationships, and and when it works for everyone and you get to all be friends at the end of it, it's, oh, man, it's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and Ethan, I appreciate you coming on the podcast and being a part of this.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it was good. We've crossed paths before, but it was good to finally hang out. I mean, we shared a tent, so.
That's true. Yeah.
We shared lunch too.
That's true.
Buffalo Wild Wings.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you guys, we shared a platter of wings. So, no, it was good, man. I'm sure there's going to be some hunts in the future, hopefully between us three. So,
yeah, I'm sure that we can figure out some cool stuff to do together.
I know it's not barns, but turkey season. We found out we got three avid turkey hunters.
Yes,
we do. Yeah, that's true. I don't know. We can figure out something to do with it.
Yeah.
I got PTO or something.
Yeah, that's personal for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate you being on the Barnes Bullets podcast. And thanks for everybody listening. Hope you go shoot some 25 RPM.
Let's do it.
Thanks, guys.